The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is John Ivey for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Sports Illustrated for Kids. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the June-July issue of Sports Illustrated for Kids. And we're going to begin with a superstar tennis player, Tennis Golf from Paris, keeping the dream alive. Coco Gauff, the 20-year-old tennis sensation, hopes to make up for her Tokyo disappointment. 3 years ago, at the delayed 2020 Olympics, Coco Gauff was supposed to have an incredible experience. She was set to represent the United States in tennis at the age of just 17. But 2 days before she was supposed to leave for Tokyo, she found out she had COVID-19. Her trip was scratched. Since then, Gauff's career has truly been a whirlwind. She reached the finals of the 2022 French Open. Then, last summer, she was shockingly bounced in the first round at Wimbledon. That spurred Gauff to begin working with a new coach, Brad Gilbert, who quite quickly brought out the best in her. At her next Grand Slam event, she won the United States Open and has climbed to the number 2 world ranking. Through it all, she never lost sight of her Olympic dream. Earlier this year, she explained that she had written a note to herself on her phone, "Win a medal." When Gauff clinched a spot on the team in March, she was beaming. Gauff has to like her chances. The Olympic tournament will take place at Roland Garros, the site of the French Open. Gauff has historically played well there. In addition to her runner-up finish in 2022, she reached the semifinals this year and won the women's doubles event. The surface at Roland Garros is clay, which is much slower than hard courts or grass. That puts a premium on patience and strategy, something Gauff has plenty of. At the Open, she played like an old pro, keeping the ball in play and wearing her opponents down instead of trying to hit spectacular shots. Some called it winning ugly, but it was winning nonetheless. That's what Gauff hopes to do in Paris. She'll have a shot in singles and doubles, and if she comes home with any hardware, she'll be happy. I'll be completely honest. I don't really care what event it is in, she said earlier this year. I feel like a gold, silver, or bronze, whatever medal it is one of those things that doesn't matter. I feel like I would appreciate it just as much whether it was in singles or doubles. I want a medal at any of the events. Keep your eye on Simone Biles, gymnastics. After battling the twisties, the goat is back. There's something special about seeing an athlete perform at the height of their powers on a huge stage. That was supposed to have been the case 3 years ago at the Tokyo Olympics, where Simone Biles looked to surpass her 2016 haul for gold and a silver. But Biles developed a case of the twisties. She lost all sense of where she was when she was flying through the air. Biles withdrew from most of the competition and came home with just a silver and a bronze. But the twisties appeared to be a thing of the past. Biles won her 9th all-round United States Championship with ease in May. At 27, she almost certainly won't compete at another Games, so this is her chance to go out with a bang. Sydney McLaughlin, Lavrone. You can't blame Sydney McLaughlin, Lavrone for toying with the idea of adding a new event to her repertoire. Though she's only 24, she'll be competing in the 400-meter hurdles at her third Games. In 2016, she became the youngest athlete to qualify for the United States track team since 1972. After winning gold in Tokyo, McLaughlin Lavrone considered adding the flat 400 meters to her schedule, but ultimately decided against it. She wanted to stay focused, and it's not like she doesn't have plenty of time to try later. Noah Lyles. The marquee men's track and field event is the 100 meters. The gold medalist is traditionally referred to as the fastest man on earth. The exciting part isn't just seeing who's going to assume that title, it's seeing if a new world record will be set. At least that used to be the case. The current mark of 9.58 seconds was set by Usain Bolt 15 years ago. The reigning world champ, 27-year-old Noah Lyles of the United States, has a personal best of 9.83, a full quarter of a second behind Bolt's mark. Lyles will be one of the favorites, but there's another United States runner to watch, Christian Miller. He ran a 9.93 in April as a high school senior. At that point, it was the fastest time this year. Miller just missed qualifying for the race, but he'll be part of the United States relay pool. Lyles isn't just a threat to win the 100, though. He's also the reigning world champ in the 200 meters. While it's not as glitzy as the 100, the race will provide Lyles a better shot at a world record. His personal best is 19.31 seconds. That's only .12 behind the mark set by who else? Yes, Bolt. When else? 15 years ago. Swimming, Katie Ledecky. The 1,500-meter freestyle is a losing event. Katie Ledecky's women's world record is over 15 minutes. That's plenty of time for viewers to kick back, grab a snack, and watch some swimming. After touching the wall to end the race, it often seems like Ledecky herself has time to do those things as well. Her winning time at the United States Olympic Trials was a full 20 seconds faster than the runner-up. Ledecky's mark of 15:27.35 was the 19th fastest ever recorded. The 18 times ahead of it all belonged to Ledecky. That makes her probably the safest bet to win a gold. She'll likely also race in three other events, looking to add to her haul of 10 career medals. Don't call it breakdancing. One of the two new sports, breaking, is certain to draw plenty of attention in Paris. Despite the fact that it's a dancing competition, it's known as simply breaking, not breakdancing. Competitors go head-to-head in a series of throwdowns, with judges picking who advances. The athletes are known as B-boys and B-girls, and the B stands for breaker. They show off their move to music played and chosen by a DJ. That's unlike, say, the gymnastic floor exercise where the competitor picks their own tone. Breakers such as 2023 world champ Victor Montalvo below, a.k.a. B-boy Victor, have to be able to improvise and think on their feet, or their heads, which are just as likely to be on the floor. Rock climbing. When it made its Olympic debut at the 2020 Games in Tokyo, sport climbing was met with mixed reviews. The main criticism was the format, which combined the three disciplines, lead climbing, bouldering, speed, into one all-round medal. That will change in Paris, where speed climbing will get its own medal. That's good news for Samuel Watson. The 18-year-old from the United States is the current world record holder. He scurried up a nearly 50-foot wall in 4.798 seconds. Watson envisions his route up the wall one move at a time. He trains his mind to do that with a very different hobby, chess. Surfing. When you look at that picture of the surfer to the left, it is unlikely the first thing that pops into your head is Paris, and with good reason. That's Tahiti. Paris is located 100 miles inland. Surfing on the Seine River is hardly an option, so Olympic officials had to look elsewhere. They settled on a place with a connection to the host country. Tahiti is in French Polynesia, a collection of islands in the South Pacific that is the territory of France. The village of Tahipo is known for its massive waves, so the competition should be intense. So is getting there from Paris. In 2020, a flight from Tahiti to France set the record for the longest domestic flight at more than 16 hours. Keep it 100. Years ago. The Summer Olympics were held in Paris in 1924. Safe to say, the world, including the Games and its athletes, were different a century ago. Paris, 1924. The most successful swimmer of the 1924 Games was Johnny Weissmuller, who won 3 gold medals. There were only 6 men's events. Weissmuller later went on to a career in Hollywood playing Tarzan. Richard Norris Williams of the United States won gold in mixed doubles 12 years after he survived the sinking of the Titanic. The average salary in the United States in 1924 was around $2,000 a year. Compare that with Rin Tin Tin. The German Shepherd, who was one of the most popular movie stars of the day, reportedly earned that amount in a month. The United States men's gymnastics team competed in several familiar events and one weird one, rope climbing. Competitors were graded on style, but since 22 of them got perfect 10s, the medalists were determined by their times. The 1924 Games featured 3,088 athletes from 44 countries. This year, 10,500 competitors from 206 nations. The guy who designed this 1924 poster wasn't an Olympian, but he could have been. Medals were handed out in architecture, literature, painting, and sculpture. There was a music competition, but alas, no composers were deemed worthy of medal. For the 1924 Games, 914 medals were produced. This year, that number is 5,084, each with a piece of metal from the Eiffel Tower. The 1924 World Series was won by the Washington Nationals, but not the ones you think. These champs relocated to Minnesota, where they became the Twins. Pop quiz. Who was the United States president in 1924? Did you guess Calvin Coolidge? You are correct. The priciest single event ticket in 1924 went for about $5, or $94 in today's money. This summer, the highest price for a ticket is $2,887. Hall of Cool, Class of 2024. Caitlin Clark, Fever's Dream. It only took a few hours after the Indiana Fever drafted Caitlin Clark for her jersey to sell out. 3 days later, Tim McGraw was wearing it on stage during a concert. Okay, you don't think McGraw is the arbiter of that's what's cool. Consider another icon who was recently spotted wearing a number 22 Fever jersey, Clark herself. Who else could cause the NCAA's women's final to draw more viewers than the men's? The only play cooler than a half-court three is a perfect dime. Clark will provide plenty of both for the Fever. Ballpark organists. Sports events can get a little intense, with all the music blaring and flashing lights. Sometimes it's nice just to have a chill environment, and nothing says chill like smooth instrumental music. Organists used to be everywhere, but now they're disappearing from arenas and baseball, which is a shame, because the organist plays live, which allows for clever songs on the spot. Think Three Blind Mice when an umpire makes a bad call, or tailoring music to a specific athlete. Braves organist Matthew Comiskey above had become known for walk-up songs that play after a hitter's last name, like Darth Vader's Imperfect March for outfielder Harrison Bader. Baseball arguments. Replay has plenty of benefits, like mostly eliminating bad calls. But bad calls can be fun. There would lead to arguments, and few things are more fun than watching two middle-aged men curse at each other while being close enough that the brims of their hats touch. Sure, we still get the occasional scrap, but not like the good old days. Check out some videos online, just without the sound. Steffi Graf. Serena and Venus Williams were inducted into the Hall of Cool in 2022. If you've done something on the court neither one of them ever has, that's a pretty solid case for inclusion. Only one player has ever won all four Grand Slam singles titles and an Olympic gold medal in the same year, Steffi Graf in 1988. She retired at age 31 with 22 Grand Slam wins. And now, what else? She's an avid pickleballer. Jesse Owens, Buckeye Bullet. Jesse Owens didn't waste time making an impression. When he was in high school in 1933, he equaled the world record in the 100-yard dash. 3 years later, he competed at the Olympics in Berlin. Owens won four gold medals, infuriating German leader Adolf Hitler, who preached white supremacy. Owens also sent another message at the game by befriending and posing with German athlete Luz Long. Boban's Blunder. Last season, a restaurant ran a promotion where if an opposing player missed two free throws in the fourth quarter of a Clippers game, fans would get a free chicken sandwich. Boban Marjanovic had briefly played for the team in 2018 and 19. When he returned as a member of the Rockets in April, he repaid the crowd for its support. He mouthed, "I got you," to the crowd, then clanked his second free throw. The Rockets still got the win, and the fans got fed. Win all around. The B-Stew Shoe. Women's players having a signature shoe is becoming commonplace, thanks in large part to Breanna Stewart. In 2022, the Liberty forward launched the Puma Stewie line, the first WNBA signature shoe in a decade. A year later, she unveiled the Stewie 2 Ruby colorway, which she chose in honor of her daughter, Ruby. Stewart wanted to pay homage to the strength of moms everywhere. A great message and some killer kicks. Jason Kelce. With all apologies to his taller, jet-setting, pop star dating brother, Jason is the only six-time All-Pro Kelce. Jason is the only Kelce to give a Super Bowl victory speech in a fully sequined green and purple costume. But we don't want to pit these brothers against each other. And after all, the coolest thing about Jason is how he supports his sibling, always screaming, usually shirtless, no matter the weather. The Horse That Played Center Field. Hal Higdon's book about Oscar, the savior of a floundering baseball team, until his horse snapped, is a great place to start when you're looking for longer books to read. And trust this on this. If you've ever have to make a diorama about a book in fourth grade, a well-crafted leaping horse will get you an A. Hat tricks. Hockey fans litter the ice with octopi, plastic rats, and catfish, but it all started with hats when a player scores three goals in the game. The tradition roots date back to England in the 1850s when cricket fans would reward good play with a hat. So next time you go to a game, don't wear a hat you care about. Wilma Rudolph. Rudolph, who contracted polio as a five-year-old, needed several years of treatment before she could walk without a brace. Not long after that, she began competing in high school track. At the 1960 Olympics in Rome, Rudolph, age 20, became the first United States woman to earn three gold medals in the single games, as she won the 100 meters, 200 meters, and 4x100-meter relay. Disc golf. Here's you, regular golfer. Oh, no! I can't find my tiny little ball in the sand. And a gator ate my friend Paul. Here's me, a disc golfer. I just curved a frisbee around six trees in this beautiful forest and all the squirrels clapped. But sure, Keep driving that goofy little car full of heavy clubs if you want to. Andre the Giant. Andre Razumov was hard to miss. He stood 7'4" tall and weighed more than 500 pounds. Despite his size, he was still limber enough to be one of the greatest professional wrestlers ever, playing the role of the heel to perfection. The Eighth Wonder of the World was also acted, co-starring in The Princess Bride, in which he played, what else? A giant. Texas A&M's Ball 5 chant. Spare a thought for your pitcher who walks a Texas A&M hitter on four straight pitches in College Station. Aggies fans will start chanting, Ball 5. If that one misses, it's Ball 6. And the strike zone just gets smaller and smaller. A few years ago, they got all the way to Ball 12. Who says there's no such thing as home field advantage? Multicolored panels. When the Montreal Expos joined the majors in 1969, they immediately raised the bar for stylish headwear. The team's hats featured red, white, and blue panels and a blue bill. There's just something about the way a logo popped off a brighter colored panel. Pretty soon after, teams, the Orioles and the Brewers for two, picked up on it. The Expos became the Nationals in 2005, and Washington went into with a solid red hot. Not cool, guys. Whalers logo. Putting aside the incongruity between their teammate name, a boot used to hunt whales, and their mascot, a whale, the Whalers, who left Hartford for Carolina in 1997, had the most flawless aesthetic in hockey history. A bright green, blue, and white scheme accented a logo rivaled only by the Brewers' ball and glove, and a W and a whale tail combining to make a negative space H. Michael Penix Jr., Atlanta Falcons quarterback. In high school, his team ran only a handful of plays. But after his two-stop college career, the 24-year-old is more prepared than ever to face NFL defenders. Earlier this spring, Michael Penix Jr. was sitting in a steakhouse. He slid his cell phone across the table, avoiding the remnant of an elite burger, medium well with bacon, no veggies, he had just finished devouring. On his phone was a video of the 2022 football game between the University of Washington and Oregon. Penix had already queued up the exact play, 3rd and 7, with a little more than 3 minutes to go. With the Huskies trailing by a touchdown on their own 38-yard line, Penix called a play that Washington had already run two times earlier in the game. He had never once, not even in practice, thrown the ball deep on the play. Both times against Oregon, he had thrown a quick out pass to the inside slot receiver. But this time, Penix noticed the cornerback guarding the wide receiver all the way to his left in a bail technique. That's when a cornerback's backside is facing the sideline, which helps them cover up deep roots and keeps the receiver in front of them. As he took the snap, Penix noted how the cornerback's shoulder squared towards the backfield, signifying a change in intention. Instantly, he knew he would have a short window of time to connect with the streaking receiver, the receiver he'd never thrown to on the play before. The ball Penix threw passed low over the safety's head like a city pigeon, forcing the defender to awkwardly torque his body and start trying unsuccessfully to prevent a touchdown. This moment is a great example of how Penix's six-year college career with two stops, he was at Indiana before Washington, led to a point where he could read defenses naturally, despite having little background in passing coverages coming out of high school. In the past, a quarterback with Penix's athleticism and arm talent may have been able to glide his way to the NFL without learning the subtleties of the game, and then he would suffer for it. Penix began his high school football career at Tampa Bay Technical High School, where he says his athleticism curbed the necessity for much of a playbook. Unlike many elite quarterbacks today, Penix didn't have a personal trainer. He worked out in the gym with his dad. He saw two different defensive coverages in 4 years. backyard football, Penick says. We had played, but I can count them on both hands. We didn't study. We didn't watch film in high school. We went out there and played. We didn't have the resources to watch film. Watch the Hoosiers, Penix compensated for that lack of knowledge by getting to know his receivers. The playbook was still small, but he began to piece together ideas based on what he knew about his best catchers, best pass catchers. We're running four vertical routes. I'm going to this guy. We're running cross routes. I'm looking for someone else. Penix led Indiana to its highest AP poll ranking since the 1960s and was named the team's MVP in 2020. In 13 games in his redshirt freshman and sophomore seasons, he threw for 24 touchdowns and 8 interceptions with a quarterback rating in the 140s. None of his wide receivers during that time were drafted. After spending 4 injury-plagued but mostly successful years with the Hoosiers, Penix still had 2 years of eligibility left, so he decided to do what so many players do nowadays, enter the transfer portal, a new home. There was a time when a top player hopping from one college program to another might have raised red flags with NFL teams, but the practice is so common now that some talent evaluators see it as a plus. If a quarterback can show he can thrive in multiple systems, it makes it more likely that if he's drafted, he'll find a way to fit into his new team. By transferring, a quarterback will have to win over new coaches and players at a faster rate and a faster clip, similar to the life they will experience in the NFL. Like someone who has dropped into another country and forced to learn a language, Penix came out of his new environment more well-rounded. The Atlanta Falcons were so impressed that they took him with an 8th overall pick, the culmination of a college journey that could become the new normal. 6 seasons, 4 offensive coordinators, 49 games, 1,685 passing attempts. Call it a graduate football education. We've run out of time for today's episode of Sports Illustrated for Kids. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm John Ivey reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Sports Illustrated for Kids is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.